This time on episode 184 of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., Lauren and I are going to be running down Legion Chapter 3. We're going to talk about a little bit of the weekly Marvel news and your feedback.
I'm Rachel from Tyrion's Landing, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You have been granted clearance by Director Phil Coulson. Stand by for S.H.I.E.L.D. debriefing. All information to be discussed here is classified and may only be discussed among agents granted clearance by the S.H.I.E.L.D. director.
Now it's time for your scheduled debriefing. I'm Director Stargate Pioneer.
And I'm Agent Lauren.
Welcome to Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a Marvel Comic Universe fan show. The show is recorded on Sunday, June 25th, 2017. Happy National Catfish Day, Lauren! Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a fan-based podcast on the ABC television show Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Marvel's Daredevil Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist on Netflix, Legion on FX, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and the Marvel Comic Universe in general.
Because of Angry Boys.
If you'd like to talk to us about Angry Boys, we have a website, legendsofshield.com.
We have a voicemail where you can talk to us about Angry Boys at 844-THE-BUS-1. That's 844-843-2871.
We have a Facebook page, which you can talk to Lauren about Angry Boys, and that can be found at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Podcast on Facebook.
We have a Twitter account where you can talk to all three of us, including Haley, who is away on a mission, about Angry Boys. And that is at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
If you want to show us your angry boy face, you can catch us on our YouTube companion channel at youtube.com/GunnaGeek.
And remember, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a proud member of the GunnaGeek.com network.
As Lauren mentioned, Agent Haley is away for this weekend. She is due for a vacation. We hope to have her back next episode. I was going to say issue. I'm in the comic mode. I was going to say issue. Next episode of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It just occurred to me. So if it's National Catfish Day, is that catfish the fish? Or is that catfish like the show where somebody pretends to be somebody else and lures you into their life?
Oh, no, it's totally the fish. Catfish, okay. The fish. It is not catfish. There's no way.
Because it would be weird if we had like a holiday for the other, because that's not really something that should be celebrated.
I will look into that. I was assuming it was the catfish as the fish. So we'll just see from there. This episode, we're going to be talking about Chapter 3 of Legion, that wonderful phenomenon of the FX Marvel Mutant series. Isn't New Mutant, would this be considered New Mutant, Lauren?
Well, technically, I think he was sort of hanging out with the New Mutants at some point in the comics. But when you say New Mutants, he's not traditionally who you associate with them.
Ah, I see. So the Mutant series on FX, and it's about David Haller, and we are in the third hour, and stuff is starting to make sense, and stuff is totally not starting to make sense. We'll talk about that in a second. Hey, this episode aired on February 22nd, 2017 on FX and earned a 1.04 rating. And I believe, I will have to go back and check the airing time, but I think it was like 10 or 11 at night that this series aired.
Yeah, I think here in Central Time, it aired at about 9 o'clock. So yeah, that would be 10 Eastern.
Yeah, I was thinking it was like even after primetime, but I'll go back and take a look at that. But it was 1.04 rating. And Legion, by the way, as we've been stating all along, was renewed for a second season on March 15th, 2017. No note on when the second season is going to air yet. So this was the lowest rated episode so far that we've talked about. It opened at 1.62 and went to 1.13. It's fallen to 1.04, and it will fall again in the future as we talk about Chapter 4, Episode 1. And now I'm confused. Issue, chapter, episode. So Chapter 4 through Chapter 8. So it was directed by a familiar face, Lauren, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was directed by Michael Uppendahl, who we talked about last week. He actually directed 3 episodes of Legion, 2, 3, and 8. He also directed 5 episodes of Fargo, which I need to catch up on. 1 episode of Daredevil, 8 episodes of Ray Donovan, 1 episode of Fear the Walking Dead, 9 episodes of American Horror Story, 3 episodes of Scream Queens, 2 episodes of Turn, Washington Spies, 11 episodes of Mad Men, 1 episode of The Walking Dead, and his first directing credits were 4 episodes of Becker, which is kind of a far cry from the more genre type shows that he's been doing lately.
When I saw that last week, I was putting in my mindset of Becker. I mean, that was like the next year after Cheers.
Was it? I thought it was later.
I thought it was the very next year because he came back the next year as Becker.
Cheers ran until 1993.
Yeah.
And Becker started in 1998.
Okay, so 5 years later. There you go. There's my mind saying it just happened. It was like the previous day. But in any case, Becker was indeed a far cry from any of the rest of the stuff. It was lighter TV comedy sitcom fare, really, into what we are today. So this episode, Chapter 3 of Legion, was written by Peter Calloway. He's got a total of 5 writing credits since 2006. Started out Brothers and Sisters with 8 episodes, 3 episodes of Hellcats, 6 episodes of the GunnaGeek.com network owner's favorite series, Under the Dome, and then 2 episodes of Legion, Chapter 3 and Chapter 5. Don't forget, both of these guys are producers for Legion, and Peter Calloway is also the producer for Hellcats and Steven's favorite TV show, Under the Dome. So, Lauren, Chapter 3, run me down what you think Chapter 3 means for the Legion series.
Well, it is the 3rd chapter in this first arc of David's story.
This episode starts off with one of the weirdest montages. I remember just being totally confused when I was watching this. I don't remember this montage at all, probably because I got just erased it from my mind.
I do, just because from an audio sense, it's very striking. The repetition of the "shall we begin," the story that is going on that the coffee machine is telling. And the whole time, the first time I was watching it, I was thinking, that sounds like Jemaine Clement. And we find out it is. We, I think, discussed in the first episode when we were talking about the cast that Jemaine Clement is in it. And so, yeah, I had been wondering, well, I haven't seen him, I haven't heard him, and we finally really hear him, like, front and center.
It is told to us in this episode what the history of the house is.
Yes, that Oliver Byrd and Carey, with a C, Guy Carey, were responsible for taking this, like, former horse farm and turning it into this place 30 years prior.
Didn't look like a horse farm to me. It was overgrown, but of course, if they took it over 30 years ago, that's plenty of time for a forest to grow up around it, but didn't look like a horse farm. The house itself seemed a little bit newer than a horse farm as well. So maybe perhaps the house was built after the estate was taken over. So you have the "shall we begin?" We see King, the dog, outside the farmhouse again in a couple of shots. So again, going back to "where we begin, King," that's very pertinent to David. We also see Melanie listening to the coffee maker story, which repeats itself. And I wonder if it has any other stories or if it's just the woodcutter's daughter loom story.
Yeah, this time when I was watching, I was trying to figure out there has to be some significance to that story about, you know, the whole "don't watch me work" thing. And I'm wondering if it has to do with some stuff that we find out later with the whole "don't watch me work."
Oh, could be indeed.
Because as we see later in the episode, every time we start getting close to certain of David's memories, David blanks out on it, or the memories are just completely, like, Melanie and Potonomy and everyone are just completely misdirected from them.
There is. And talking about being misdirected and the memory block, we do see the devil with the yellow eyes in that montage as well. And we see the first time, I think this is the first time we actually see Carrie and Carrie merge on screen. It was a rough CGI, but we actually see them merge. And if you didn't know what was going on, you're like, what's going on here? And I remember being completely confused on that as well.
Yeah, we see Carrie with a K, girl Carrie. You know, she's using a punching bag or something, and then she happens to walk over, and you see this kind of ripple effect as she walks into Carrie with a C.
And become one. And then you have the very erotic joint shower scenes going on, too, which is an indicator that this is an adult sort of episode, and it is indeed an adult episode, as we see later, so we'll get to that in a second. So the memory work starts again. They kind of revise their approach this time around, and they want to focus on the big events, the stuff that scares David the most, which I think is a very viable path to go forward here. And it starts in the kitchen, which we've seen over and over. And for us on the outside, it's obvious that he's got telekinesis power, but we actually go through it here. And this is the first time. And David's like, oh no, this time. And he didn't understand what was going on. He was high and the first time around in his memory, which means his memory is skewed, but he understands that there's weird stuff going on now.
Yeah. And specifically, they want to find out what led up to this scene. So we find out that he was fighting with his ex-girlfriend, Philly. So they want to find out what led to this fight. And we find out that she stumbled on him getting high with Lenny.
Mm-hmm. And again, David is embarrassed. He's like, oh, my, I can't believe that was me. And so you get a sense that he's trying to hide stuff, but we know that he's not. And it's all just very weird. The first time you're watching through this, it's like, well, this is one screwed up guy. And he still is. But there's factors around it, which we haven't discovered yet. But there's more to David than meets the eye here.
Yeah, something that I wanted to point out again. I was watching this through the lens of looking at the wardrobe and trying to see what it says, specifically David's. When you go back in his memory, he's wearing a gray shirt while he's getting just a plain gray long sleeve shirt while he's getting high. And I guess you could sort of interpret that as just kind of an in-between state. It's neither black nor white. But what's most important, and what I realized when I was trying to look up some more information online, is last episode and in the next several episodes, he starts wearing shirts that have like an image on them. Last episode, it was a circle with a square cut out of it, which you can, I guess, kind of take as seeing through something. You can take it as telepathy. This one, he's wearing a black shirt with, it's an orange arrow on it, but it's like it reminded me of video games. Like there's this one certain effect that you see a lot in video games, and it's very much like a power type symbol. And you can sort of look at this as like moving or the telekinesis or something. So I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to the logos of his next several shirts. And I saw a shirt actually that had all of the logos of the shirts that he wears in a line that you can buy and wear. And looking at them and seeing which episodes they were in, it's a lot easier for me to see, oh, this is when this is happening and this is what this means. So prepare to hear a lot more about that later.
It's like The Flash, where you have some t-shirt homagery towards The Big Bang Theory and vice versa. Did you not know that? Do you watch the CW show The Flash?
I need to catch up on it. And also, I don't watch Big Bang Theory.
Okay, well, that's fine. So on The Flash, of course, you have some t-shirts that are relevant towards pop culture. And then on The Big Bang Theory, they have, of course, t-shirts of The Flash. So there you go. So there's some t-shirt menagerie going on between the two shows. Interestingly enough, in the memory work that's going on here in the kitchen, David sees the devil with yellow eyes. Nobody else sees the devil with yellow eyes. David sees it. And then when they press him on it, he doesn't remember anything specifically. He just remembers fear.
The first time I watched this show, I think this right here was the moment where I realized, I don't think he's blocking them to be difficult. I think there's actually something going on here.
And then when he transport out to the, back to the house, out of the memory cube into the house, I'm still a little bit, I don't know whether that's David and his reflex to get away from the fear to transport everybody, or whether maybe that's the devil with the yellow eyes that's pushing these people away.
Something that amused me is when the room that they transport to, did you notice there's the big X logo in there?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, there's also an O logo, like an O logo kind of reminiscent of like tic-tac-toe or something. But they really like to focus on that X logo.
I wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
Mutants and possibly.
It was just very amusing to me.
Yep. So I think it cuts to commercial here. I didn't actually see a commercial watching it on Amazon Prime this time around. So it cuts to commercial, and when it comes back, you see a very tranquil scene at the dock where Sid and David are talking back and forth, and Sid is retelling how she grew up to David. So they're getting to know each other on a deeper level.
Mm-hmm. They're continuing their whole romance of the mind. And we find out that David has like still phantom impressions of being in her body. Like he mentions trying to brush away long hair that isn't there, or sometimes just feeling like his center of balance is off because, and actually this is a valid thing, because of the way that bodies are constructed.
Mm-hmm.
You see this a lot with acting and stuff. They tell you if you're trying to walk like a woman, your center of gravity is different because of the chest and the hips, and guys tend to hold their center of balance. I forget if it's higher or lower. It's one of those, but
probably a little bit lower since women have a little bit more mass up top. It's biological. It's mass. I've never been taught to walk, dance like a woman. So I really wouldn't know, but
it's one of those things that they teach you to focus on. Like if you're deliberately trying to mask the way that you walk, try to walk like the other gender.
This is the first time that they're talking about intimate details of being in each other's bodies. And it's interesting that Sid comes up and says, look, I have evidence that souls are real because no matter which body I'm in, I'm still me. So I think that brings up something to David that he is still him no matter what happens to him, which is relevant for the future of the series.
Yeah, I think that's very important for later, considering some stuff that happens. It's a really nice moment between the two of them as well.
So throughout this episode, we're getting this memory work, which is being pushed forward a little bit, but it's still methodical as we're going through it and we're trying to discover exactly what's going on in David's head. They do a great job in this episode of telling us that, oh, by the way, Amy, who's David's sister, is being interrogated by the Eye and Division 3. So they bring that up every once in a while, and it is meant to pressure some urgency onto what's going on. And it does evolve into a larger discussion later in the episode now.
Yeah, we see at the very beginning of the episode with the whole shall we begin bit, we see the leeches on her. Later, when we see her talking with the guy who's not the Eye, the like older dude, you see the red marks on her face where the leeches were.
Leeches. I blocked that out. I did my own memory work and I blocked that out because I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, they're not my favorite invertebrate.
So we have the devil with yellow eyes, who's that kind of Jabba the Hutt blob on the screen. We also have this bubblehead man. What do we want to call him? Bubblehead man is
the angry boy.
Angry boy. There we go. Angry boy. I didn't put that together. So we have the angry boy making his appearance known in this episode more so than anything else. And especially in Halloween. So David and his sister are out. I assume it's his sister are out trick or treating.
He's supposed to think of something stressful while Guy Carey he's injected him with dye. And actually, that was kind of funny. He's like, oh, can you hand me something? And Sid's like, what, me? And then Girl Carrie's there. And she's like, no, he means me.
And then could you not ruin my room again? Completely ruin everything again?
He's like, I can't promise that.
And Carrie just walks away like, okay, well, that's the way it's going to be around here.
But yeah, we see this memory of Halloween from when David was a lot younger. And he's wearing some sort of, I was trying to figure out what he was supposed to be. He's wearing like a colander with stuff glued on it on his head. I don't know if he was supposed to be a robot or an alien, or I couldn't find any good references for what that was supposed to be. I
assume it was just a robot, but yeah, it could have been anything. I don't know. I didn't.
You know, it has to be a reference to something. I just couldn't find what.
Cerebra, maybe?
But in any case, King runs off and David chases him down. And they go through this hole in a fence where the world's angriest boy in the world comes out. And it's very, very creepy.
Oh, it is indeed. It's creepy so much so that it creeps David out that he ends up teleporting himself and Sid to some sort of ghost-like viewing of what's going on with Amy in her interrogation, which the eye kind of sees what's going on. He sees the aberrations and he's trying to figure out what's going on. And then they disappear and come back into the lake, which has to be scary. I think David's got to work on his coordinates for his teleportation. I wouldn't want to take a ride with him right now.
He's got some accuracy problems there. I really liked how they did the effect of Sid and David in that room, by the way. It was very, it reminds me of, you see old timey TV shows and like that static that's flickering, like every now and then you see the picture, but then there's some static on there.
Oh yeah.
It reminded me of that. And I don't know, it was very cool looking.
It was indeed. It's been a while since I've seen all that. Now that we've got all digital, it's either on or it's not nowadays, you know. But they return to the lake and it was really cool the way they dealt with it, because Sid was possibly drowning. David didn't know. And she popped up and she said, I'm okay. Okay. Don't touch me, which she knows what's going to happen. They body swap and who knows what's going to happen with them body swapping in the lake. So that was interesting that they went to that extent of her doing that dialogue in the lake. I did like that attention to detail. After they get out of the lake, they go and they're talking with Melanie and everybody else on what exactly are they going to do, because they just saw Amy being tortured. So now David is like, okay, well, this has been fun, guys, but I really got to take care of this now.
Yeah. And in the meantime, Melanie's like, okay, look, you're not strong enough. And if you go back there, I mean, worst case scenario, they're either going to capture you there or you're going to lead them back here and we are all going to die.
Yeah. So it's a greater good sort of thing that Melanie is trying to point out, which David gets. He also gets that he has to do something with Amy. So he says, look, I'm going. And then a couple of people say they're going. Sid says she's going. David says, don't go. But then they have a conversation later.
Well, this is when they're talking about going into David's mind to try to help him out a bit more. They're like, okay, we're going to have to accelerate this because things just here just got very, very dire.
All the while, David is doing meditation, basically, and it's giving us as the viewer some really weird, quick flashbacks back and forth, just like at the beginning of the episode. But David's trying to get a handle on what's going on in his own mind due to the memory work that they're already doing, which I think is great for David. But it is good to have Sid there guiding him along as well.
As we've seen, he does better when he has like a touchstone there. We also find out that he doesn't want Sid. Like, the main reason he doesn't want Sid in there is because he doesn't want her to see him as he used to be before Clockworks. Yeah, we talked about this earlier. He's very embarrassed about how he used to be, and he doesn't want her to see him differently.
I don't blame him at all. He was a screwed up guy. He didn't know he had the mutant powers, at least at this point in time in the episode and or the series. And he's thinking everything that's happened has been due to that. And I don't think they're really understanding that there's something else there. There's stuff that bothers them, but they don't know for sure. So then they end up going under again with more potent drugs this time. And they're trying to find out how he ended up in Clockworks. David, because he's subconscious, shows up as a child.
Yeah, it's like his inner child. And that was interesting.
And the reactions were interesting, too, because David went to Sid and hugged her. The first time the two had actually, quote unquote, physically touched. I mean, they're in this memory plane. They're not really physical entities. But Melanie says, hey, look, you can touch each other. So David runs to her when he hears that, like, oh, yeah, inherently he loves her. So this is just an interesting reaction from his inner child.
Yeah. And again, we get more of the world's angriest boy in the world. That seems to be kind of the theme in this episode. It's the recurring villain, I guess. This thing that keeps popping up again and again.
We see David robbing his psychologist. I forget the doctor's name off the top of my head.
I want to say Poole.
It's Scott Lawrence, or it's Dr. Henry Poole. Yep. And he's robbing him. And then when he's robbing him, you have memory flashes within the memory flash, which draws everybody's attention. Like, whoa, we've not seen this before. What he's trying to do is he's trying to get the tapes, so there's no record of his conversations with the doctor.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because typically when a junkie robs someone, you know, you saw earlier the stove and selling it for money for drugs. And that's usually what people think of. To know that he's doing it for the tapes, I mean, tells you a little bit something more is going on. He's trying to protect himself. Something's trying to protect him.
And it's interesting that Sid is seeing things that the other two are not. Melanie and Ptolemy are not seeing, but Sid is.
I'm wondering if that has to do with her having been in his body.
It very well might be that there's an actual connection between the two of them, and she's experienced some of these memories, so she can connect with them a little bit stronger, maybe?
Yeah, I think that conversation between the two of them might not have been just, you know, a sweet little moment. I think that might have been there to remind us, the audience, that they have this connection now, because he's still getting flashbacks from being in her. So naturally, she would still have kind of connections from being in him. And this might account for why she's able to be a bit more familiar with the way that his brain works, because for a little while she was inhabiting his brain.
Indeed. And this is where the real adult stuff happens, by the way, because David, and I assume it's Philly, are having sex in the bedroom, and little child David is seeing it, and Sid's like, oh, come here, you don't need to see this.
Yeah, you don't need to see this, you don't need to see this. The first time I saw this, I was wondering, are we seeing David being conceived? Like, is that Professor X? But no, they had hair, and it was very obviously Dan Stevens.
I assume it's Philly. You can't tell at all that it's Philly, but I'm assuming that's what it is. So Sid is trying to protect David.
And I think there was also a moment just for her, because again, she can't touch people. She doesn't like being touched. So there's just, again, that kind of moment of kind of very pointed reminder.
Yes, indeed, that she can't do that right now with David without body swapping.
Even if she did like being touched.
Right.
She can't have this.
And she's also trying to protect David from this unknown danger that's going on around them as well. And it causes several of them to wake up. Now, Melanie's the one who stays the longest. Now, she gets her hand mangled by the world's angriest boy's book in the memory. She gets out and it was so real to her that she thinks her actual hand is mangled. It is not.
I hate dreams like that.
I know. And I think it just points out that this was not a dream. There was something else going on in there, which I believe Sid stated.
Yeah. And then all of them wake up except for David. And when we have that final peek back into David's mind, he's in a little, what looks like a box of light, surrounded by people yelling at him. Now, we who have read the comic can kind of guess that these are all of David's other personalities or fragments of his personality that are trying to make themselves known. But in the show, it's just really scary and confusing.
Right. And I'm wondering, I don't remember exactly when Jermaine Clermont actually enters in. I don't remember what chapter or what episode he did.
I think it's another episode or two.
Okay, so this isn't the gateway to that as well. I was thinking it might be that. But it ends really abruptly, and there's no pre or post credit scene. It's just him in that light memory thing. So very confusing episode chapter 3 was. Just when you think you were starting to get a handle on things, it didn't seem like you were.
Oh, and we didn't mention Lenny showing up again.
Oh yeah.
You know, when they're asking him, remember something stressful, Lenny shows up and she's telling him, oh, your sister's getting tortured and some other equally unpleasant stuff. And in the meantime, Guy Carey, is looking at his equipment and he's saying his speech center of his brain is active, but he's not talking. So again, we're finding out that something abnormal is going on.
Indeed, that he's not even appearing to talk while his speech center is engaged. I mean, it wasn't like he was mouthing words or anything. He wasn't. He was literally just sitting there. And then it was flashing back and forth to Lenny being in the room. And there was an active conversation going on. So just very weird. And the second time through, it makes a lot more sense. But the first time was like, what is going on with this? I don't understand. Probably attributed to some of the ratings drop for a lot of people like me that hadn't read the comic. Were like, what is going on here? And they didn't give any hints or anything like that. And it didn't really have the staying power for a lot of people to try to stay and figure out what was going on as well. And it was a little bit darker than It was a lot darker than a normal, you know, kidsy superhero sort of stuff going on, which is really what the X-Men are. The X-Men is very dark.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I've always liked them.
Indeed. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's in chapter four. I don't remember right now what's going on next week in chapter four, but we will be running through that next week before taking a week off to deal with Spider-Man Homecoming. So really looking forward to that. Lauren, what was your favorite part of this episode?
My favorite part of this episode, probably that conversation with David and Sid by the lake. I think it set up a lot of important stuff, and it was just a really nice moment between them.
It was indeed. I think it's not really a favorite, but the last memory sequence with Child David was probably the most memorable out of this for me. But yeah, you're probably right. The conversation by the lake, very intimate, very set up a lot of things. Don't know the correct words to stay there, but this was a good episode in retrospect, but the first time around, I think I almost quit after seeing this episode. So I'm interested to hear next week what Haley's reaction was. Once again, she will be back next time, just taking a day off. All right, Lauren, with that, let's move on to the news. Another series that we're going through right now, we just finished it actually, was Luke Cage, and we'll start the Iron Fist series later this week, but it's all leading up to the Defenders, and we have some Defenders news for you.
Yes, this past week, the Defenders Twitter account released their motion poster and an actual first poster for the show, which is now their Twitter picture. I really, really like this, and all of the individual, like, show accounts started tweeting with their individual little section and just a little phrase. Let me see if I could pull up some of them real quick.
I'm looking forward to the Defenders because we've gone through at least four series right now. I have not seen any of Iron Fist. Looking forward to starting that this week, but the Defenders, I've heard, is going to be great.
Luke Cage's is straight out of Harlem. Jessica Jones was, this is my face, now get out of it. Daredevil's is, I don't need sight to know you're staring. And Iron Fist's is, they didn't teach this kind of focus in Kunlun.
Interesting. For those of you worried about Haley's ability to get through the Defenders with Jessica Jones, she has now been equipped with bourbon. So whether or not she makes it to the Defenders with said bourbon or not, I don't know. But I know for a fact she has bourbon in her house. Moving on to Spider-Man Homecoming, there were initial screenings from actual, you know, reviewers. They're not allowed to post anything yet, but they were allowed to tweet some initial reactions. And so they're coming out and they're mostly positive.
Okay, IO9 has like a roundup of a bunch of tweets. They're not allowed to post official reviews, but like tweets are pretty good. It's the social media embargo has been lifted. So everything says that Tom Holland is fantastic. All the high school stuff is great. The tone is great. The stuff about the larger Avengers verse is kind of mixed. The stuff about the drama is a little mixed. But the fact that Tom Holland gets it right has me pretty excited. I generally like Spider-Man, so I'm actually looking forward to this.
I am looking forward to it as well, getting a little bit more adept into the Spider-Man universe, thanks to Anthony Bachman over from the ATGN podcast. He's now doing a segment on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Long Box Edition, running down Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2099, The Amazing Spider-Man, and Spider-Gwen comics. And it's been really good to listen to that and then to hear Tom Holland and to see Tom Holland in Civil War and to know that that's being brought forward is great. I'm really excited to see Aunt May. Wondering how many minutes Aunt May has with screen time in this particular movie. So we will see in a couple of weeks. Moving on, we have an X-Men note on Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, well, there's actually two bits, little bits of Dark Phoenix news. The first one from the Nerdist is X-Men Dark Phoenix casting breakdown reveals surprising characters. The folks at That Hashtag Show have gotten their hands on a casting call for lead and supporting roles. They have a video that I haven't watched yet. But, okay, so it's all done under code name. But characters like Sunfire, Dazzler, and Mimic are very probably going to be in it. And then there's a character of 8-year-old Marie who it might be Rogue. So we'll see. And of course, there's casting breakdowns for what sounds like the Hellfire Club. And also the descriptions of the alien Shi'ar. So we might be seeing Lilandra, which will be very interesting. And the other thing about this is somebody wrote an opinion piece for IO9. When Dazzler comes to X-Men Dark Phoenix, she better not be played by Taylor Swift.
I don't know. It wouldn't be so bad. I mean, it could have been Jessica Simpson.
Yeah, there's one paragraph that I like. There are a number of things that Dazzler and Swift have in common, like being blonde, famous, and starting very public feuds with former friends. But Dazzler isn't just any old regular pop star. She's the most famous openly mutant performer and a cultural icon in Marvel's books. Most importantly, though, Dazzler can dance. Swift made an entire music video about how she cannot. So I would honestly rather not have a famous musician play Dazzler. Personally, I think that would really kind of take away from the role.
It could have been Chloe Bennett, but man, she's already cast in the Marvel Universe.
But she's not cast in the Fox Universe.
True.
And we do know that Chloe Bennett can sing and dance.
That's true. We know because of the wars. What were they called? The lip sync wars?
Yeah, lip sync to the death. And also because of her career as a pop star.
Indeed. You know, I was thinking since you said she Dazzler is the pop star of the universe, this could be Min May. This could be the Robotech Marvel crossover right here.
Oh, God, Min May. I'm not a fan of Min May.
So looking forward to Dark Phoenix when the casting come out, and you will hear us talk about it on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. But in the meantime, we're going to move on to some of your great feedback.
We got some tweets directed our way. Consultant Black Adam tweeted us and said, "See, someone liked my name for LMD May." And then he retweeted at Real Talk Reactions, which is at @real_TLK_reacts. Haha, I love it. I saw a comment somewhere calling her #Terminator or something similar and pretty much died. So, yeah, that is pretty good, Adam.
Way to go, Adam. You got a mention from Real Talk Reactions.
And then friend of the show Ferris at DX Ferris tweeted us from a thing from Variety. Edgar Wright talked to us about Baby Driver and leaving Marvel's Ant-Man. I haven't had a chance to listen to the interview, but I will have to. I didn't realize that Baby Driver was an Edgar Wright movie, so I might actually have to go see it now.
There you go. Ferris coming out with the great trivia. Always good with pop culture, Mr. Ferris.
And then this wasn't so much a tweet, but I noticed it and I had to include it in the just tweet about us.
In the announcement tweet for the episode, which comes out.
Among the people who liked the tweets was Akila Cooper. So that made me happy.
Mm-hmm. We've been getting some likes from the writers and directors of the episode as it goes out. So lots of great stuff going on in the Marvel Universe. That's it for feedback for this week. We're really looking forward to your comments about Luke Cage or Legion, and we'll talk about them in the upcoming episodes. In the meantime, it's time to walk this one out. Thank you very much for joining us for Legion, our third edition, chapter 3. If you've been downloading the podcast and just want to say hi, hey, go ahead, tweet us at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Podcast or drop me an email, StargatePioneer@GunnaGeek.com, and we'll read your shout out on the show. More importantly, we haven't had a lot of reviews lately on our iTunes, now called Apple Podcasts. So if you want to leave us a 5-star review there, we will read your review on the air.
And I want to thank everybody who sends us stuff on Twitter, who follows along with live tweets, although I haven't done any lately because I've been busy. Yeah, just everybody who kind of listens or thinks of us, we really appreciate it. We love hearing from you and knowing that, you know, you like what we do and you like following along. And we really hope to hear from you now that we're going to start doing Iron Fist this upcoming Thursday.
Yep, looking forward to your comments on Iron Fist. But until next time, we're hoping that Haley doesn't run out of bourbon. And I am Director Stargate Pioneer.
And I'm Agent Lauren.
See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, go to GunnaGeek.com and you will find all our contact information and other shows. You can also visit legendsofshield.com, where you'll find our complete archive of podcasts. The music heard on this podcast is by Kevin MacLeod, found at incompetech.com, and also artists on pond5.com and audiojungle.net. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of the individual hosts and do not represent Stargate Pioneer Productions, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., or Gunna Geek. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the property of the Disney Corporation, Marvel Studios, and ABC. No infringement is intended.
Broadcast has been successfully terminated.
Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is copyright 2017.